Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Hi, everyone. This is Tim Rutten here again. Welcome to the third and final episode of the three-part conversation with Forrester's principal analyst, Ewart Smith. The past two episodes, Ewart, Jouk, and myself were discussing the decline in banking customer experiences, where in the last episode, we explored how digital transformation can actually help banks to achieve operational excellence. So, if you didn't listen to those episodes just yet, be sure not to miss out on them. There's a lot of interesting points there. But today, we're going to be wrapping things up by analyzing the state of open finance and how banks can use it to gain a competitive advantage. Enjoy. And if it's okay, let's move to the third and final one for today, and that is embrace open finance, Ewart.
Yeah, open finance is a broad category. Platform banking falls in there. So if you're a bank and you want to serve a broad set of services and capabilities, you have the ability with a modern system and platform to plug in different components of it might be an insurance product, it might be wealth management, it might be something else. You become a platform for a variety of services, including your own core banking business. Another aspect of it is open banking. The whole thing maybe falls under open finance, but open banking in per se has been really a sharing of data from the bank to a third party, usually a fintech. Doesn't have to always be a fintech. And then they do something with the data and provide a customer interface. And you are the power behind that. You are the actual bank with the license. And the customer is approving the use of that data. That's another model. Another model is banking as a service. Well, I don't have to necessarily just give data. I could give the entire functionality. I could embed my functionality into another business, and I could give them a full bank. I could give them deposit capability. It could be Uber and then have them put a bank inside the app for the driver so that when they get paid, the money's right there in their bank account. They can make payments to their own utilities and other things they need. The fourth is embedded finance or embedded banking. And that's where I just put a single functionality, single capability into a flow, a customer experience flow of another business where there's a financial transactional need happening. Typically it's payments, but it could be lending, could be anything really. And the customer doesn't see that the bank is even there. It's a set it and forget it model where, you know, you kind of establish that my bank will be the this day it's typically a card, and I just have a button I press, yes, authorize this card, and then the transaction continues. But it can be deeper than that, and as I go through whatever transaction, I could even be face to face with a car dealer, you know, in a finance office, and it just immediately goes, the flow happens, and I don't even necessarily see, you know, my financial transaction happening. All that under in this open finance rubric, which is evolving in different ways around the world. We see it as it's hard to really characterize it fully this way, but I think, you know, in some parts of Asia Pac, it's a little bit more advanced, and it's a bit more individualized by country and maybe a little bit more freewheeling. Less as freewheeling, but more advanced than some other places is Europe, pushing a much more specific regulatory construct around how that should all play out, so that everybody has the same platform, same playing field, same set of rules. I think the U.S., North America, probably broadly, is further behind. I don't think we have the regulatory environment yet. I think we have a lot of big banks trying to sort of manage through that. Little bits and pieces of those are happening. Certainly in platform banking, that can be done, but it's a little bit harder here. I think, you know, you see Africa and the Middle East, and you know, they're two different environments as well, and maybe even you know, Mideast is probably pushing the envelope further, and so is certain countries in South America, like Brazil. But that's going to come around the world, and I think that the key imperative is customers. There's been a movement, I think, that we've seen for the last 50 years, where banks went from you had to interact with the bank on their terms in their building. Everything was done in their building. You might write a check, but beyond that, all your interactions had to go to the branch. Then the core banking systems evolved, and we were able to start doing things differently. I could go to any branch. I could also then go bank by phone, then ATMs, then the website. And it's been pushing customers out of the business, but still within the four walls of the bank, you know, now extended digitally. And then you add in the mobile device, and now I can roam anywhere and I can be anywhere. I don't have to be tethered to any kind of system. I can be doing anything. And you start adding all these capabilities like contactless payments and peer-to-peer payments and other kinds of things. The next step is pushing banking invisibly and immersively into other experiences so that I'm no longer even on a banking application or platform. I am in the wild doing whatever I want, and really bringing home this, I think this concept of open finance really brings home this perspective of, you know, I want to do shopping and have a better shopping experience. I don't want to have a better payments experience. I want to do better buying and be able to buy whatever I want. And I don't want to have a better lending experience. You know, I want all that stuff invisibly embedded into the things that I'm doing. And I don't want to think about it. I do want to have to think about it at some point, because I have to make certain choices. Like, am I going to be a Chase customer? Am I going to be a Lloyds Bank customer? Am I going to be a, you know, Standard Bank of South Africa customer? These are some fundamental choices. But then once they're done, the bank sort of operates immersively in my life, in all these experiences that I'm having. That's here, but it's going to really evolve over the next, you know, few years, 5 years. It's our immersive and invisible sort of banking, future of banking prediction. And anybody that wants to be participant in that area is going to have to think about a different platform of capabilities, a different way of building these tools. APIs and open events, open APIs and open events are going to be critical. Real-time processing and straight-through processing elements are going to be critical to this. And if you're doing banking as a service, where you're embedding modules or even functionality in an embedded finance way, you know, some level of ability to deploy, you know, the microservices outside your four walls through the API interconnects is going to be absolutely fundamental. And these things are not available to, you know, most core banking systems, unless you've sort of isolated the core and used an engagement banking platform layer to enable those capabilities on top of what you do, but it's still limited in its breadth.
Jord, if I had to think, if I were a banking executive, just to stress test the whole opportunity a little bit, of course, there's a compliancy element. I don't like it. I have to do it, right? So let's not go there. Let's just look at the business opportunity. Like the first one, like the final one, number three, number four, like embedded finance, invisible. Basically, as a bank, I'm going to lose the customer experience layer. It's happening somewhere else. So basically, I'm a headless, faceless factory to do these services. You can definitely compete for it, but you're going to compete with Adyen. You're going to compete with Stripe. You're going to compete with hardcore technology companies that will go fast, probably faster than you. And if there's 1,000 banks, let's say, in a search in the US, for instance, I don't think there's a market for 1,000 BaaS or backend as a service providers, right? There's a few. It's going to be economies of scale. So it's going to be a red ocean, and you're going to compete with a bunch of hardcore fintechs that have a different culture and a different pace. So as a banking executive, for that embedded, it's going to happen, but do you have the right to play, and are you equipped to win? What's your view?
Yeah. Well, we had a company ask us just the other day, how do I build a defensive structure for this? Because our executives don't believe in it and believe they're being forced into it by regulators, and want to understand what the defensive you know, structure should be. And by that, I think they mean, we're going to have to participate, but how do we do it in a simple, easy way and maintain as much business as we can and so on? And we told them, you know, you have to think about this differently. This has to be thought of as an opportunity for you. And when you think about it as an opportunity for you, then what becomes those differentiating capabilities? And they can range from being able to embed additional services in that transaction. Different services might include proactive insights for a customer. Like if you use our product in this, and you might be outside of your goals for your current month spending, what we do is we automatically open up this small line of credit, which allows you to borrow against this thing, or we move money, save now, pay later type thing. We can move money out of an account that you have identified for something. You set the rules. We automatically make these things happen so that you are always covered. And we are proactively, programmatically doing these value-added services. We also maybe provide you with a unique view of your world, you know, back at the bank anytime you want it, so that you can now track your spending on different capabilities. Maybe we add in ESG capabilities to allow you to understand what the carbon offset might be of all of your transactions and things you've been doing, or we add in personal financial management or some other capabilities that now start to pull in information and insights from all these things. So there's ways to do this that make it actually a value add to the customer and give you a new position in the marketplace. If all you think about is, oh, I have to have an open API to provide a link for a third-party service provider to embed the thing, I think you're going to lose. To your point, there's always somebody that's more nimble and more capable. You just have to start thinking like a fintech or thinking like some kind of technology company, moving at that speed. You know, we used to call it the speed of the internet, but it's a different way of sort of envisioning it. And it really just requires a sort of a flip of the problem. You know, it's no longer thinking about it defensively. It's thinking about it offensively. And, you know, anybody that's watched any sports knows that the best defense is a good offense.
I'm all in favor of going carbon neutral and go green, but I think most consumers don't care. We've seen some data points like, but maybe this is just one little example. Jurrit, if it's okay, you mentioned platform banking. If that's okay, like you said, that was your the first element of open banking, right? Where you can aggregate. Isn't that a very realistic, very exciting opportunity for banks to say, hey, I can now make product propositions. I can make data propositions. I can include I can include insurance. I can include, you know, whatever kind of third-party capability, and I can bring that together in new value propositions. The reason why I say Revolut is that I noticed with my son, he's all his big purchases he's doing with his Revolut card, so he has insurance. So if that guy is 18 years old, if he would buy an iPhone, he would literally buy it with his Revolut card because he has a full year of insurance included in that subscription. This is just a little example. I know it's just NS1, but I find it very interesting to see like how these guys are meaningfully bundling third-party capabilities into a compressed value proposition, and you go from silver to gold to platinum, and that's kind of how the business model is structured. Any bank can do that.
Right. Any bank can do that and do it today, even with their existing platforms and capabilities. It's just far easier to be able to make those tweaks. And a digital person, a business person, or a CX person, product person can make those changes in the future in these modern systems with a low-code tool or a no-code tool, just by saying, I want to add in this insurance and drag this ecosystem partner in. The APIs are automatically connected, and next thing you know, you've got this new functionality and feature to your product set and your experience set. That's critical. I think that's the exact answer to how to think differently about these things. You know, it's not just that I'm going to be able to offer my banking services, but within the banking services, what are those extra things we can start doing that enhance them? I don't disagree. Customers don't, the things that I've seen customers say they don't care about, or at least it falls almost to the bottom of the list, is ESG related things. That was very high, probably 4 or 5 years ago. It has become less so. But I don't think it's going to go away eventually, but we'll see what happens. I think real time is another one that's tricky. We've not been able to measure real time as a thing that customers want. I think that tends to fall on the backside of it is when they try to do a transaction after having gotten paid by somebody in a peer-to-peer payment way, and they want to move their money out of, let's say, their Venmo account to their bank, and it's a 3-day process. That's when they get upset about it. But if you ask them in the cold, do you want real time, you know, they tend to not think it's an important element. So some of these things banks are going to have to do because it will impact them, even though they can't necessarily poll a customer and say, do you want this? Customers just know what they want when they see it. It's the old, you know, product design thing. I don't know what I'm looking for until I see it.
You're spot on. Like, we see this everywhere. We see it in Asia, we see it in Africa, we see like these peer-to-peer networks in Africa. You see M-Pesa in Asia, you see a whole bunch in the US, of course, with Venmo, etc. Like, but connecting that with the payment network, and actually everything needs to be real time, for sure. Maybe back to platform banking for a moment. Like, there are all these third-party providers for insurance, for real-time payments, for investment value propositions, you name it, robo-advisory. Everything is there in the cloud, and we can compose it into a value proposition of the cloud. Does that mean, in your point of view, that we also then need to unbundle, let's say, product management and pricing, what is typically kept in the core, very difficult to change, to move that to the engagement layer so we actually now can make bundles like we see in telco, right? Or you have telephony with data. Like, what's your view on product and pricing?
Yeah, totally. I think it absolutely has to be unbundled and abstracted up out of the core and into a layer, right? Into something that's above the constructs of the domains and the enterprise level functionality domains and the product domains. The reason is because I think those products, to your point, they extend across all of those domains. They have features and functionalities and capabilities that represent all of that, potentially. And then also those third parties that are connected out through the ecosystem that can be bundled together, that cannot be done in a core. So that lean core at the end of the day really becomes just a system, a small system, a thin system, you know, that is going to take a set of instructions through some kind of API and make a change to the database, to the debits and credits based on the instructions, based on a set of constraints and limits, then set event flags, and then add anything to regulatory reporting or provide any data over to a monitoring device. So that is it. Everything that isn't that gets pushed up or down out of the core. And so it could be pushed into a data layer, it could be pushed into the infrastructure layer, stuff for managing those elements, and pushed up, and product and pricing would get pushed up and out of that and into a layer that is, you know, connected to the customer experience design layer, I think, very seamlessly, so that those products can be built, deployed, and have products can be built and deployed by people and independent of any change to any technology, so that I can deploy it within a day if I need to for a certain customer set. That's where that agility is. I can change my customer experience. I can change the products. I can change what's bundled in the products and all the different ecosystem partners I might add to that extremely fast. Again, that ecosystem is all API connected, and you have that access. So you've pre-integrated all these third-party partners, built those relationships, and have them available to your developers and to your business people, so they can put these things together very quickly, and then eventually to your AI systems, so that they can build those things very quickly.
It's kind of maybe a little bit ironic, but like, if we do what you just said, like, hey, you decouple the product and the pricing, and you're going to aggregate stuff. And the core ultimately becomes a very lean ledger and does the auditing for the regulators, et cetera, and sort of the processing orchestration to the payment rails. You could also argue that you don't need a lean core for this. You can just hollow out your core and you pick your legacy core just in a thinner operating model. Is that a fair conclusion? Or?
Well, I think so. And I think that's what people are talking about when they talk about a coreless environment. You know, at the end of the day, you can say, I can get that thing as thin as like nothing, practically.
Yeah, just blow it out step by step.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think some of these new digital banking processing platforms, as we call them, trying to come up with a different name than the core banking systems, that is a, you know, that those companies are still, they're building that lean core. It's very thin, but they're also providing a whole banking construct of functionality and capabilities around that, so that as a bank, I don't say, oh, I just bought this practically nothing, you know, now I've got to go build all this other functionality to do my lending, my payments, my everything. So they're providing still all that capability at some level, depends on the company, but it's now decoupled and unbundled. And the beauty of those systems is I can now get rid of chunks of it if I wish. I can only buy or only use pieces of it if I wish. But that begs the question, it's like, when in 3 or 4 years, do we still talk in terms of engagement banking platforms and core banking system platforms and data it feels to me like we're almost at a point, we're getting to a point where it's a bunch of service functions, service capabilities, need. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of ways to think about this. But as a bank, I now just simply have a box of Legos that I can plug together. And I don't necessarily have one single construct. And my development team, aided by AI tools, now is all about how do I piece these things together? I need that core processing layer. Let me just put that in place. I can swap that out anytime I wish. It's probably so mundane a functionality that it doesn't really matter what it is. You know, it's going to be the least interesting piece of my entire banking functionality. Everything else is the interesting stuff, which I can now swap out and build from anything that I can put together. And I'll certainly have companies that will supply me with lots of capability that I can then plug together and kind of maybe one fell swoop or basically pull pieces of it together. But I mean, we're already seeing that level of sort of disaggregation of capabilities, but it's not as extreme as I think it will get. But that's a little bit down the road. Those companies will be the most flexible, the most capable of innovating fast, moving with, you know, with whatever regulators need and whatever new advances AI brings and whatever customers expect. Those companies are going to move at light speed because there's almost nothing to stop them. They just grab a new piece and plug it in and off they go.
I think on that high note, we can move to a conclusion for this first episode with yourself, Ewart. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. Is there any final, let's say, key takeaway you would like to share towards the audience for this first episode and conversation?
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of things that banks can do, but what banks don't want to be in the business of doing is running giant monolithic technology systems. They need to be in the business of innovating their strategies and the way in which they go to market for customers, retail consumers, businesses, corporate clients, private banking clients. You name it, they need to be in the business of supporting them and driving their products and services into experiences that those consumers of their business will take on and get out of the business broadly of managing these old legacy platforms. And to do that, as we've talked about, it's a fairly complex, but it's straightforward and it can easily be tackled process of progressive modernization coupled with change management. That allow you to get there. I think the sooner you get there, the better. The more likely is you'll succeed in the market and not be, you know, one of those banks that isn't going to make it. So, time to get moving is now.
Take action, Jouk. Anything to add from your end?
No, thanks, Ewart. I just realized, like, it for many people in the audience, it still will sound very daunting, or maybe in a way also too good to be true. And I think also I would be the first to say it is difficult. Still, there's, you know, ultimately it's banking, it's regulated, etc. But like these arguments in the past were always maybe the arguments not to do it. I think now it's more of an encouragement. We actually can do it. But let's keep in realization. I think bankers are very intelligent people, very rational people. And they just have 50 years of IT investments just running there. So to quickly say, okay, let's move to a new platform and everything is seamless and all that. And I know you're not saying that at all, but I think that's guideline or that, like, how are we going to navigate through this transformation? I think there has been a lot of lip service about digital transformation and we're just actually building another siloed mobile app.
That's the biggest challenge. And I think, my last word, you can have another last word if you wish, but my last word would certainly be, don't fall for the sunk cost fallacy. You spend a lot on things and they served you well. But today's a new day and we have to think about the ROI from here forward. And that's not going to involve, we've already spent and paid off, $1 billion. We have to ignore that. That's what gets people into trouble with tech debt, I think, a lot, is that if you like, that's a sunk cost that we're stuck with. Well, you're not. It's going to take work, to your point. It's daunting. It's going to look hard. It's going to take a lot of alignment. It is going to take some money. You can figure out how to do it with a more friendly payback model, but with progressive modernization. I don't mean to sound like that, you can make the switch overnight, but the sunk cost fallacy problem is real and it hinders a lot of businesses.
Then let's wrap it up for today, Ewart. Thank you so much for joining us. It was very insightful to discuss the majority of the report. There are more pieces to discuss, so I'm going to re-invite you soon to the podcast, not just in 4 years, to check whether the predictions were correct. We're going to have you in the room here again very soon and double-click once more on the other topics. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you very much, both of you. Great to see you again and look forward to talking soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.